So no matter what it is, we'll be the champions. Oklahoma, we've been it.
Excellence has been established by Coach Wilkinson, Coach Switzer, and Coach Stoops. It's my responsibility to defend that standard and to build upon that standard.
Welcome to the Oklahoma Drill Podcast with your hosts, Jesse Curtin-Biddle and Brian Clark.
Hello, Sooner Nation. OU Insider subscribers, Coach Brian Clinton enthusiasts, Dr. Shin enthusiasts, Dr. Shin stands. This is certainly the podcast for you because this is another episode of the Oklahoma Drill, a podcast fueled by OU Insider and the Rivals Network. Not the Rivals Network. We're on 3/Rivals. /-Rivals. God. I just went to autopilot there for a second because I was about to jump forward to my next bit, which is I'm Jesse Crittenden, and I'm joined probably by Dr. Shin Stan himself, Mr. Clinton.
All about it. Stephen Shin is... he's a saint, man.
Saint Shin?
Yeah, Saint Shin.
Shin the
brother,
saint?
Brother Shin. Yeah, he is... He is... I don't think he would ever have to buy himself a beverage if he came to the state of Oklahoma.
See, that's one thing about Oklahoma because, you know, it's like even the Thunder winning the title, like Jalen Williams posted something. He posted a receipt he went out to eat or something, and I think it was taken care of.
That sounds, yeah.
And I love that, like, he's a multimillionaire, has all the money in the world.
Right.
But if you do something good for an athlete in the state of Oklahoma, you're taken care of.
Correct.
Yeah. We haven't even actually got to, we didn't do a podcast during the bye week. We're recording this Thursday night. OU plays Kent State on Saturday. We haven't actually even talked about the John Mateer injury and stuff. And that was over a week ago. So we don't need to go through all the ins and outs, but I got to tell you, man, I've had some time to think about this. We've been to, you know, press conferences and availabilities since the announcement was made that he's going to be out for the foreseeable future. John Mateer is going to be out for the foreseeable future. And I've had some time to process this. And I have a couple of thoughts to throw at you, which is,
okay,
this is such an interesting development. And it comes at such an interesting time. And because of all of the domino effects, it both makes me a lot more intrigued about this Kent State matchup than I otherwise would be because OU's favored by a trillion points. It was 45.5 the last time I looked at it.
Yeah.
But this is John Mateer's injury. There's just so many ways to dissect it. You know, outside of the obvious, when is he going to come back? It's about what does it do to OU CFP chances? Does it improve them? Does it make them worse? Also Michael Hawkins, and also the timing of this injury in relation to Michael Hawkins getting out there with Javonte Gibson coming. This is just, I don't know, but let me ask you this, because yeah, I can ask you this as a fan. Are you in any way, and this is pure speculation, let's make this clear, we're not reporting anything. Do you hold on to hope that John Mateer can come back for Texas?
Yes.
Just as a fan.
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely. It's hope. It's not a whole lot more than that, but I believe it's 16 days is how long he would have had to go from surgery to playing a game, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's not apples to apples, but Matthew Stafford, I believe, was the one who had similar issues and was back in a couple of weeks. I don't know that you're going to find Oklahoma, just like the other premier programs in college football, is going to have access to the best of the best when it comes to doctors and rehab and all of that stuff. So it's not out of the question, but I think, honestly, my honest opinion about that game, it is huge to have a guy that's got experience going into that game at quarterback. I mean, quarterback is the most important position. But I think if there's been a time in Brent Venables' tenure where you might be able to say, you're not going to have to score that many points, I would feel the best about this year as opposed to any of the last three. So if it doesn't happen, I still have full belief that Oklahoma can be in that game and win that game.
Here's the thing. For one, it goes without saying, it's a genuine bummer that the John Mateer is going to miss any amount of time. Even also just covering him, he's a really fun guy to talk to. He's an insightful guy to talk to. He's just a really fun guy to watch play. And also, it's just a bummer because you want the best players out on the field
100%.
And all that stuff. I've spent a lot of time thinking about this Kent State game and what OU should be trying to do, what you can take from it, because OU's going to win by a billion points, and I don't think it doesn't do any good to pretend that that's not going to be the case. It would be let's say it would be shocking if that's not the case. But I do say, and we'll be able to talk about this more intelligently next week, but I actually weirdly think that, like you said, I think OU, OU has to have John Mateer to win that game. I don't think that's a crazy thing to say at all.
No.
This defense is that good, and Texas's offense has been like, they were fine against Sam Houston and Arch Manning flexed. Good for him. You know, you love to see that.
I mean, he was playing the same kind of guys that he was playing in high school again. So like,
I loved how much mileage Texas got out of that and the SEC. A little underdog engine that could Texas.
Yeah.
Flexing on Sam Houston. I think OU could win that game without John Mateer.
Well, let me put it this way. What has been the most dynamic part about John Mateer in this offense to this point? It's been his ability to make things happen with his legs.
Yeah, and guess who run? Guess who can run?
Like, legitimately, Michael Hawkins is somebody you need to... And here's the thing. Like, I think the worry, and I'm getting off on a tangent if you need to set me back.
Let me hear it. Give it to me.
I think what kind of excites me, and like you just said, I think there's more intrigue around this Kent State game now than there ever would have been. That's what happens whenever you have a change at the quarterback position. But you add Giovanni Gibson coming in. You've had a couple of weeks for other guys around them to get healthy. The offensive line should be improved. Michael Hawkins, whenever they played Texas last year, didn't have a soul to throw to. And he also didn't have an offensive line that could pass protect for crap. Like, I mean, let's just call it what it is. It was rough.
Yeah.
If there's one thing that this offensive lineman has been good at to this point, it's been protecting the quarterback. And we saw a couple of times last year when Hawkins had time, he could put the ball where he wanted to. And so I think you have some guys that can protect him. I think you've got some weapons out there that can. I would be very surprised if the vocal part of the fan base right now that is saying, oh God, Michael Hawkins, you know, like, are we really, is this what, if they're not very, very quiet or have their tune changed quite a bit, if he goes out and does what I would expect him to this week and then goes out and has success against Texas, if he is the one who draws the start.
Well, to that point, it's made me think, like, I don't put that much stock into Michael Hawkins playing, or like last year. I don't put that much stock in all of that. This is an entirely different ecosystem around him. It's an entirely different ecosystem.
Not even the players. I mean, yeah.
But. Yeah, the coaching staff. And John Kusiewski in particular has worked very closely with Michael Hawkins. The other thing about this, too, is, well, for one, let's make it clear. I think OU can win, and we'll talk more about that Texas game later. I think OU can win without Michael Hawkins. Their chances go up significantly if John Mateer is playing. And that's less to do with Michael Hawkins and more to do with John Mateer.
Right.
But This is what I'll say. And I'm not telling OU fans likely anything they don't already know or aren't already thinking. But if you don't, I mean, this coaching staff is going to has planned through this bye week and are prepping for this game this weekend as if it's going to be Michael Hawkins against Texas.
Right.
And that should be the mindset, which has made me think about what we're going to see this weekend and what OU needs to get out of this weekend. And I think there's actually like a ton of things they need to get out of this weekend.
I agree.
Like a lot.
It's a much more important game than it would have been 2 weeks ago.
Yeah. Oh, if John Mateer was the quarterback, let's go ahead and skip forward because I mean, there are interesting.
It's a glorified bye week. It would have. Yes.
Yeah. But there's actually all of a sudden like a ton of things they need to do. And part of that is because it is just more likely than not that Michael Hawkins is the starting quarterback against Texas. It just is.
Right. Yeah.
That makes me think ahead to this weekend. It is just so different to have a bye week, to have more than a week to prepare for Michael Hawkins to be your guy, on top of he has a year under his belt and starts under his belt. This is just such a different thing compared to a year ago.
Yeah.
When he was thrown into the middle of the Tennessee game and then OU changed things on the fly.
Yeah.
OU has time to prepare both for Kent State and Texas as if Michael Hawkins is going to be the guy.
Yeah.
I'm so curious about what we're going to see. And look, Kent State's ranked 133rd in scoring defense and 134th in total defense. They haven't beat an FBS team since 2022. OU shouldn't have any issues moving the ball. Yeah. But if it was John Mateer at quarterback, you would see the most vanilla, basic game plan. Mm-hmm. OU can't afford to do that with Michael Hawkins. They need to see what he can do
live. Yep.
And that part of me actually is excited for that. Mm-hmm. But I'm really curious what they draw up for him. I'm wondering what is the ratio between passes and rushes? What's the ratio between scrambles and quarterback design runs? What's the ratio between short intermediate throws and throwing the ball deep down the field? I don't know. That's super interesting because this may not be a one-off thing. This may be you're having to use this to prepare for Texas. I don't know. Right. As a fan, you tell me as a fan, what are you hoping to see from Michael Hawkins this weekend?
Control. A grasp of the offense. I think last year it really felt like just the position that he was thrown into. It was a lot of backyard football. Like, and when you have organized chaos, I think we've seen it with guys that go on and win big accolades. Organized chaos, whenever a play breaks down, is one thing. Baker Mayfield finding somebody down the field on the backside of a route combo that shouldn't be open, but is because it's been 7 seconds. Like, those things are awesome. But what we saw last year was the opposite. It was you have the offensive line leaking like a sieve and guys that can't get more than 2 or 3 inches of space between them and a defender. And then Michael Hawkins has to run around and try to make something happen. I think this seeing some organized, some control demand, like being able to really take command of the offense and march down the field methodically would be a big one. Another thing would be, I honestly don't feel like he lacked confidence last year. Even with all the issues that the offense had, like, it's still, you could tell when Jackson Arnold was out there, his confidence was shaken. Outside of that Alabama game, you could really just see, like, it just didn't, things didn't look right. But when Michael Hawkins was in the game, it seemed to, he seemed to have confidence regardless of what was going on. So I think that combined with having some command of what's going on, and then seeing him be able to stretch the field. If he can stretch the field in the passing game, if he can hit on those deep in-cutting routes that we like, that, you know, we've seen Arbuckle use with Mateer, and if you can get a guy like Javonte Gibson stretching the field, you know what he has as an athlete. You know he's able to make things happen with his legs. If you can stretch the field and make a defense play two high safeties and really force those guys out of the fits, I mean, he can be an absolute nightmare. So maybe you just see him stretch the field and have some command of the offense. You have to be excited about it. The question that I have about all of this with him is, you hope that John Mateer is set to return in 26. And I know we're looking way out ahead, but if Hawkins goes out, puts up big numbers against Kent State, beats Texas, and then they turn around and beat, it's South Carolina after that, right?
Yes.
And let's play devil's advocate. He plays South Carolina and they win. And then Mateer comes back. Well, you've got a 3-game stretch where he's 3-0, looks good. That kind of puts with today's game, that kind of puts you in a precarious position because you've got a guy who can have success, but obviously you want Mateer back if you can get him. So is that a guy that now you're worried about maybe hitting the portal otherwise wouldn't have? It's there, like you just said, I don't think timing wise it could have gone any better. If you're gonna have the injury, it was literally could not have happened at a better time for Mateer if you had to have it. But it does open up a window to some other challenges that I maybe wouldn't have seen.
I wouldn't worry so much about that because this coaching staff they want to redshirt Michael Hawkins.
Sure.
That's the goal here.
Yeah.
I think Michael Hawkins would have to play really, really, really well
Yeah.
for there to be any type of, but I think for me, if you're this coaching staff, I think you need to feel, yeah, it's Kent State is really bad. Sorry, Kent State. Sorry, Golden
They are,
Flashes.
yeah.
You're really bad. You're not a good football team. I'm sorry. Is that bad?
Yeah.
I don't mean to be
No,
mean.
you're not being mean. I mean, you're stating a fact. It's just not a good team.
To play an FBS team, maybe they have fun in the MAC this year. Who knows? I think this coaching staff has to feel really confident about what passing concepts he is comfortable with, as if you're preparing for Texas. So two things. I want to see him inject some real juice into this rushing attack, which I'm going to get to in a second. That's
Yeah.
one. Two, I want to see him throw down the field. And specifically, I want to see him throw down the field to Javonte Gibson, because that's
Yeah.
the other part of this. You can't really afford to let Javonte Gibson dip his toes into the water. And I don't think that's this coaching staff's plan for him. I think he's going to play, and I think he's going to play a lot.
Yeah.
Get him comfortable. Get him into the
As
offense.
yes. Yep.
Get him intentionally involved into the
Yep.
offense. I think those are, like, from a Michael Hawkins point of view, it's not only throwing down the field, but throwing down the field to Javonte Gibson, both to establish rapport between those two as if they're going to have to play against Texas, and then also just for Javonte
To get him
personally.
going.
Yeah, to get him
Yeah.
going. Here's the other thing, if I'm an OU fan, this OU should have a billion rushing yards
Yep.
against Kent
Big
State.
time for sure.
Florida State almost had 500 rushing yards. They averaged almost 10 yards a carry against Kent State.
Yeah.
I mean, they just ran, I think they ran the ball like 52 times and
Wow.
just kept running the ball. And here's the thing. Texas ranks third in rushing defense. They rank fourth in yards per carry.
Now, they have played like the 122nd
That's true.
best rushing schedule, but it still stands.
Yes.
You need to be able to run the football. Yeah.
That's the thing. And that's why, like, if I'm this, I know there's a lot of people who have talked about Jay Nott and you know, is this the last weekend for him to get involved? And I think that's a hard thing for this coaching staff to try to balance, because this team would be better if Jay Nott was an active contributor to it. There's just no doubt about it.
100%.
But, and I don't know, I'd be a little surprised if Michael Fasusi goes or plays very much against Kent State. I don't think it's going to be your top five guys, but if I'm trying to build any kind of confidence against Kent State, you know, OU ranks 105th in rushing. You want to talk about the flip side of it? OU has already played Auburn and Michigan, but this is a
Sure.
team that's played Temple and Illinois State and they rank 105th in rushing.
Well, I mean, and then when you see what Texas A&M did on the ground against Auburn last week, I mean, apples to oranges, but at the same time, you need to find a way to have success. If you're going to continue winning football games, you cannot be one dimensional. I mean, you just can't, not on offense.
No. And so I think it's twofold. You can hope Michael Hawkins can add some juice to the running game, which John Mateer has at times been the best part of this rushing attack already, but you want to get him involved so you can help that part of your offense, but also to take some pressure off of him to be able to run the ball. I mean, to me, if I'm this coaching staff, I think anything below 6 yards a carry is pretty disappointing and cause for concern.
I would agree with that.
I mean,
yeah.
And also, if you're trying to build some confidence for Texas, I think that's I'm appalled. I mean, OU is 114th in yards per carry. And yet they've played Michigan and Auburn, but like that's really bad.
Yeah,
that's if you're going to critique anything on for this whole team, it's been the running game,
unquestionably. Yeah, that's the one. That's the only mark that I have against this team that's keeping me from saying, yeah, this is a team that can go and compete for whatever they want to.
Yeah, and I mean. Well, that's what makes me like, you can't just play Russian roulette with this with this running back rotation.
Right.
Which they haven't. I mean, it's been Torrey Blaylock's been the guy. He's taken 50 more snaps than any other running back. So it's not like they have been, but like, I don't think you can try to get Jaden Ott involved just for the sake of trying to get him involved. Cause you're paying him a ton of NIL money.
No, he needs to, if he's earned it on the practice field. I mean, because I think as you said, it can't just be to get him because we've paid this guy, we need to get our value out of it. Like, I think it's at this point, if he's earned it in practice, because let's like on a level playing field, that's who you want starting. That's who you want back there. If all things are equal, you want Jade not back there. You've seen the proof is there. He is a guy with NFL talent as far as carrying the football. Now, what does that look like? Pass pro? I think we've seen some of the things play out on the field when he's out there that might be contributing to why he's not on the field more than he is. But if you can find a way to get him out there because he's earned it in practice, then great. Otherwise, I think you just got to keep rolling with Blaylock.
Yeah, and part of it would be valuable too, because Torrey Blaylock is playing through a shoulder injury that not even a month ago, there was concern about him missing multiple weeks with that with that shoulder injury. Yeah. But I mean, like, this has got to be this. That's again why this John Mateer injury just makes this Kent State game a whole lot more interesting and a whole lot more meaningful. If this team is leaving Owen Field with another like 4.5 yard per carry, or God forbid, under 4 yards per carry, that's a 5-alarm fire to me. Yeah. You should be able to put your third string offensive line out there and run for 5.5 yards per carry against Kent State.
Illinois State was much better defensively than Kent State is, I think, structurally. So you're right. There is not an excuse. You're not going to play anybody. You will not play anybody the rest of the way that is even remotely close to being as downtrodden as this defense is. It's just not even close. So yes, you should have a huge day.
Again, not trying to find things to complain about. Oklahoma's 4-0, and I want to talk about the SEC as a whole in a bit, but it's not ideal if you're a fan that John Mateer is out, but at least for this game and maybe beyond, but like, This is the why you talk about the running game being bad is because this is a team that has all of its goals out in front of it. That's why you talk about it. Defensively, I don't really have that much to talk about, except I asked Brent about it. I don't know if you know this, Brian, but OU hasn't forced a turnover yet. I don't know if you knew that. They're the only team in the country
that hasn't
forced a turnover. I asked Brent about it, but this is what I asked Brent. I said, OU has been so good in other areas. They're top. They're the number one passing or the number one third down defense in the country. They're top 10 in sacks. They're top 10 in tackles for loss. They've been good in all these other metrics. Does that kind of take off the burden that you would normally need to force turnovers if you're really good in all these areas? And I really loved his answer. He gave me a really insightful answer, talking about how they look at turnovers and explosive plays and tackling as the three stats that typically determine a team's success. He talked about how he gave stats about how turnovers aren't always the number one stat. He went back to last year, how Notre Dame, I think, was first in the country in takeaways or turnover margin. Ohio State was in the, I think they were 54th when I looked at the stats. But so it's not the end all be all, but for reference, I went through the stats. By the end of September last year, OU had forced 12 turnovers. At the end of September a year ago, they had forced 13. We're now at the end of September. We're in October now. Spooky season. Talk about spooky. OU hasn't forced a turnover.
Yeah.
Now, Kent State's only turned the ball over five times, but OU should come out of this game with a couple takeaways, I think. It would be insane if they get five games into the year. That's almost halfway through the regular season without a takeaway.
Right.
That'd be crazy.
Well, and like the defense has been elite to this point. I mean, you just got done talking about it. The defense has been elite to this point, and yet you're talking about any of the last 3 years, you get to this point without forcing a turnover. And I think you've got some concerns defensively, like, not that you already, I mean, you already did in some ways, but this year, for them to be as good as they have been statistically, not just passing the eye test, but for them to be as good as they have been statistically without forcing a turnover is wild. And they've had spots where, I mean, this last against Auburn, was it Kendall Daniels that dropped? I mean, it was a
Peyton Bowen had one too.
Yeah, that one too. Yeah, Peyton Bowen had one that would have been six, I think. But yes. Interesting.
Yeah, I mean, and look, and part of it is also that the offense has turned the ball over six times, so you're negative six in turnover margin, which that's also, I actually almost think is more important to me if I'm trying to analyze what is most successful is, or what would help in terms of being more successful, is this offense actually needs to turn the ball over a little bit less than they have compared to the need for the defense to force takeaways. But that's definitely there. And look, they have been good in like all of the other areas that you have to be good in to offset that. You kind of like have to be first in third down defense to be 4-0 without takeaways.
Right. Yeah.
Also the defensive line, I'll say this. I said this on the radio earlier. I had some skepticism about this being the best defensive line in the country. It might be the best defensive line in the country.
To this point.
The interior, man, I mean, to have David Stone has maybe been, through four games, the best defensive lineman, at least at Oklahoma. Jaden Jackson is right there.
I would say the best way that I had this conversation, the best way to, he has been the flashiest. He has been your flashiest defensive lineman. Stone has been. I don't know that there's been a more consistently good player in the country. Like if Jaden Jackson is an Outland Trophy guy.
Yeah.
I mean, legitimately, when he is in there, you're not running the ball. You are not running the ball at the middle. The guy, and they're double teaming him every play, and the guy just holds his ground.
It felt like the Auburn game was the first time where the stats actually showed how impactful he was, where normally the stats don't always show how impactful he is.
Right.
Yeah, like I think I said before the year, like if OU is going to be the best defensive line in the country, David Stone has to take like a massive jump. And he has.
And he has.
He's already played more snaps than he did a year ago. I think he is
surprising. Like, I mean, we talked about that preseason. How many more snaps he would have, and we knew it would be more, but through four games, he's already.
I think he had 90 last year. He's played 105 this year.
Yep.
He's played more snaps on the interior than anybody but Dominic Williams.
There you go.
I think he's the advanced stats love him. He's been, but like when you're thinking about replacing DeJon Terry, like David Stone has been DeJon Terry on non-illegal steroids. I think that my only other question is, I'm curious about, actually, let me make it clear. I'm not insinuating in any way that David Stone is on steroids. I'm making that, that's a point. It's a metaphor. People say it all the time.
Breaking news, David Stone.
Please, OU comms, don't come after me. I think my only other question is, how much does Eli Bowen play? Because again, if you're talking about context matters, like Michael Hawkins coming into a different situation with a healthy, better functioning offense with a better support staff. Eli, this is not the cornerback room that Eli Bowen ascended in a year ago. Gentry Williams is healthy. Corlin Guillory has been really good despite some of the tougher moments against Auburn. You have Kendall Dolby who can play corner. I think Eli Bowen is probably still this team's best corner, probably. And I don't think it'll take very long for him to establish that, but I do wonder, do they ease him in? Because again, it's not like Javonte Gibson, that it's clear the offense needs somebody like him to be on the field. Like, you need Eli Bowen, obviously, but against Kent State, do you have to play him 30 snaps, 40 snaps? Also, the cornerback's rooms are just better.
Yeah.
He will play. I just don't know how much he'll play.
Yeah,
he'll see.
Well, like you said, I don't know how necessary it is. I mean, if it was a situation where it's like, I'm drawing a blank, freshman number four, the guy that's playing. Yes, thank you. If it was a situation like you have with Cortland Guillory, where you don't really know what you have game time wise. You haven't seen it on the field yet in a game, then yeah, it might be necessary to play him since he's been injured, but like, you know what you're getting out of that guy. You saw it last year. So don't rush it. There's no reason for it. He's going to be just fine when he comes in. If he's ready to roll, you want to get him back up to game speed and knock the rust off before Texas. Yeah. But I just don't know how necessary it'll be. How much rust are you really going to knock off covering Kent State's wide receivers? I'm not trying to be disrespectful, but like, the truth of the matter is, you're getting a lot better reps in practice than you are in a game there. So
I will say, Kent State, like, their best statistic I think is they're like 91st in passing offense, so watch out, Oklahoma secondary. I don't know. I mean, I just think for me, outside of an obvious win, if you're this coaching staff, I think you want to feel pretty good about what Michael Hawkins showed you, particularly in the passing game. I think you want to feel like Javonte Gibson got incorporated and the running game was awesome. That's the one. I think even if Michael Hawkins may not have to be that explosive for the offense to score 60 points or whatever the case is. That might be the number one thing for me, is the running game. That's probably.
I mean, overall, Michael Hawkins aside, I think yes, that is absolutely what you need to see in the game. You need to have a clean game, I guess. If there is anything defensively, if there is one thing that has, we just talked about turnovers, but if there's one thing that has happened on the field, it's the explosive play. Just you have the one long. You have the one long run against Michigan that breaks off for a touchdown. You have the Cam Coleman sighting where, you know, he breaks off a couple of long ones and a touchdown. So maybe limiting that, having a really clean game from that perspective. But again, this just, there's not a whole lot of statistics saying that Kent State is capable of something like that. So, play a clean game, get the running game going, get out of there healthy. I think all of that, you're looking good.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because OU is first in the country in plays of 10 yards or more allowed. So they've been great there, but they're 83rd in plays of 40 yards or more allowed. They've allowed 5 of those.
Yeah.
So that's probably the one thing you
that
don't want to do.
That just comes with the aggressiveness of the defense you're playing.
That's right. And also, that doesn't look nearly as bad if you have some takeaways to go with it. The other thing, man, and I think I want to close it here, and we don't normally talk about the rest of the college landscape as a whole, the college football landscape. I got to actually watch games during the bye week. It was awesome. I don't normally get to do that. Especially, like, I'll usually, like, if OU plays in the morning, I'll get to watch, like, the primetime game, a game or two in the evening. If OU plays in the evening, I'll get to watch, you know, the marquee morning game. Or, you know, I have YouTube TV. I'll put a bunch of the games on and try to watch that way. But I actually got to watch games. Oh, yeah. Technology, man. What would they think of next? I loved watching the SEC games in particular last weekend. Mississippi State's frisky. They're actually not a bad football team.
Yep.
They're really not. I got asked on the radio today, so I just wanted to get your thoughts. Who's the best team in the SEC right now? Who's the best team in the SEC?
Objectively, from what we've seen, probably Ole Miss.
It's probably Ole Miss.
But I honestly, like, as funny as it sounds, I honestly think that answer can change week to week.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it really can. And I think that just goes to show you how competitive the league is going to be. Typically, I would say you have a team that's just kind of way out in front of everybody else, or two, maybe. I think we saw that gap close a little bit last year because Georgia wasn't as good as they have been, and then Texas kind of ascended a little bit. I don't see that this year. There are like seven teams right now that I could say, if you told me in December these two teams are playing for the SEC championship, I'd be like, okay, yeah, that checks out. I'd like, I mean, it's going to be a wild race.
That was part of my takeaway, is it was just, I mean, watching these games where there's just a lot, the SEC in some ways is already shaking out differently. I mean, Missouri looks good, man. Missouri is a good football team. I did not expect that. Yep. Maybe that's my fault. I didn't expect that. I will say, can I give you a hot take?
Sure.
I don't think LSU is very good. Relative to the expectations,
I do not think they belonged anywhere near number three when they were that high. That to me, that feels like you're riding the wave of beating a Clemson team that is far worse than it really was.
Talk about, yeah, God, Clemson, rest in peace, Dabo. He's still very much alive, but rest in peace, Dabo. Like, even watching the Ole Miss game, I was kind of surprised. Like, LSU's defense is good.
The defense is good. The offense is very, very underwhelming.
They only beat Florida because Florida's offense is somehow worse than Oklahoma's was last year. And that is saying something.
That's wild.
That's saying something.
Yeah.
I got to watch that game. Parker and I were in the hotel room in Philly after the Temple game and got to watch LSU Florida. And I was like, man, that game said more to me about how bad Florida was than it was about LSU. Garrett Nussmeier has not looked good through 4 weeks. But I look at my hot take was, I think it's going to be a struggle for LSU to get to 8 wins. That's my hot take, because look, they play South Carolina, which they'll probably beat South Carolina. They still play Vandy, A&M, Bama, and OU.
Vanderbilt, man.
Vandy's frisky, man. Wild. Vandy's frisky. And it was just like, okay, so Alabama's going to beat Georgia because Kirby Smart sold his soul for national championships, but the cost is you lose to Alabama every year, apparently.
Sometimes twice.
But I look at all these teams and I'm like, Ole Miss is good. Ole Miss is a good team. They're not unbeatable by any means. They're a good football team. Mm-hmm. I mean, man, you could tell me Ole Miss wins it. You could tell me Oklahoma wins it. You could tell me Texas. I think A&M is really good. A&M is in some ways been the most impressive team to me in the country. And they haven't been perfect. Let's make that clear. A&M has not been perfect.
Yeah.
But they've been really impressive. Bama, Georgia, Tennessee. Tennessee probably should have beat Georgia a couple of weeks ago. It's just, you could tell me a bunch of these teams. All these teams are like really good, but have like one flaw at least that is easily exposable. Like for me, for Oklahoma, it's the running game. But like for Texas, the passing game has been underwhelming. It's just like all these teams. It's just, I think a bunch of I didn't even mention Missouri. I think Missouri could win the SEC. I don't think that would be the most shocking outcome. It's just a fun, I don't know, man.
The conference is just loaded, and I think there are a lot of great teams I mean, I wonder what the balance between cannibalizing itself and getting a lot of teams into the playoff is going to look like. Because I think, I mean, it's going to be really hard. It's going to be really hard for a 9-3 team, or for more than one 9-3 team to get in. I think you could make the argument with how loaded the conference looks. 9-3 being a viable option to get in is probably better, looking better now than it was, just with how many ranked teams you have.
I thought at the beginning of the year, I picked Oklahoma to go 9-3, and I was like, if they go 9-3, they'll flirt with the CFP. If they go 9-3, it's like the odds are pretty good
Well, and every
to
team
get
they play
in.
from here on out is ranked
Yeah.
right now.
Which is, it was interesting to hear Brent Venables talk about, like, he got to watch games too, and I was like, I relate to
I have
that.
some
I
of
also got to watch games.
that in
But I really don't think it was coach speak. He was like, watching the games, it's clear that, like, OU's goals are in front of them,
Yes, they are.
and they could win all of these games. OU could go 12-0. I
Who's the
firmly
best
believe
team?
that.
Who's the best team in the country right now? Top to bottom.
Gotta ask that too. Man, like, is it probably Ohio State or Oregon or Miami? Like, probably, but like,
I thought
I
your
don't know.
I thought your take on A&M was interesting, because that's a team that I have kind of said, okay, that's a team that's better than I thought they would be. Now, again, like you said, they're not perfect, but like, it's going to be really fun to see how this all plays out, because there are several teams that I think were overlooked and are playing much better than people thought that they would, and there are a lot of teams that are playing a lot lower than people thought that they would.
I agree.
And nobody is perfect.
I'm going to end this pod on a hot take, and
Yes.
I think I said it to Parker. I'm looking at their schedule now. Talking about Mississippi State. Their remaining schedule is A&M, Florida, Texas, Arkansas, Georgia, Missouri, Ole Miss. So they play ranked teams: A&M, Texas, Georgia, Missouri, Ole Miss. I think Mississippi State's going to beat two of those teams. I think Mississippi State's going to finish with like 7 wins, but I think two of them are going to be
Big ones.
beating some of those top 15 teams.
Yeah.
I
Who,
really
where,
do.
where is, where's the Egg Bowl?
The Egg Bowl
Is it in Starkville or is it in
is in Starkville.
that's there you go.
I know.
I
I honestly, I'll say this now. I think they'll beat Texas. Put
do
it
too.
on it right now.
You want an even
Flip
hotter
it.
take?
Let me hear it.
I don't think Texas is safe this weekend.
Florida. Oh, I'm really glad you said that. I almost tweeted this and I chose not to. I'll say it here. I almost tweeted, I think Florida can win. And then I backtracked a little bit and almost tweeted, I think Florida covers because I think it's Texas 6.5.
Yeah.
I have this weird feeling.
I see it being like 13-10 with 7 minutes left in the fourth
Yeah.
quarter, and it's like, what in the crap is going on down in Gainesville? Yeah, like,
Part of it is I hesitated because DJ Lagway, I guess, was wearing a boot last week, so he may not be fully healthy. And if I had to bet, I would bet on Texas winning, but like, I think that game's gonna be close.
Yep.
I think it's gonna be really
Because
close.
Florida's good defensively. Florida's.
If the offense had a pulse against LSU, if DJ
Yes.
Lagway qu
Yes.
quit throwing picks, they would have won that game. They would have.
Yep.
I'm really glad you said that, though.
I mean, I have a feeling. And
I
it's
think
right ahead. It's literally right before the Cotton Bowl. So, like, I mean, it just, I could see it being it's one of those games. It is just one of those games.
I weirdly had a feeling about it too. I do, just in the sense of like 6.5 is a big line for an SEC game
On the road.
and on the road. And man, I mean, like you said, I wouldn't be shocked if it's 13-10 either
Yeah.
direction
Yeah.
midway
Texas
through the
embarrassed
fourth.
them last year. Like, there are just so many. It has those intangibles, like those, ooh, this is one of those things that kind of catches your eye if you know what's going on. And that, yeah, we'll see.
I think it might be the most under the radar game of teams in the top 25 that's like
When is that game? What time? What time slot is that game? I know we're trying to end the pod here, but what time is that game?
2:30. 2:30 in the swamp with the Texas offense being as up and down as it's been.
Yep.
Arch Manning better make some plays.
Arch in the swamp.
Arch better make some plays. Yep. I think Texas will win, but I'm really not that confident in saying that.
Yeah.
I'm really not. Yep. That's going to do it for us here on this episode of the Oklahoma Drill featuring hot takes. Hot ones, hot takes. Not hot ones because that's copyrighted. Thank you guys for watching as always. Make sure to like and subscribe here at this OU Insider YouTube channel. Head over to OU Insider, become a VIP member today. Lots of interesting football this weekend. We will be back next week to talk about Kent State, talk about Texas, all of that other fun stuff. Make sure to watch us here. Thank you guys again for watching. We'll see you guys next week on the Oklahoma Drill. Until then, you guys take care.
Shins out.